And we are back. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, making it cool to be a conservative. So we're gonna go down a road here in just a minute that I think is unique. Unique in all the world. Like, I don't know where they come up with this stuff. I mean, it's one thing to say, I want the graphic novels that depict, you know, homosexual sex acts in the children's section. Oh, then there's other stuff that they do that's just, they like to sneak it in under the guise of social justice. And that's where I'm headed next. So this next section I've got, I'm heading to Dipper number two there, Big Rig. I'm making the call. So Dipper number two is called The Lie of Health Equity. And I know most of you out there are going, what is that? What's health equity? Well, think about what we're talking about. Health equity. You know how liberals love the use of equity now. Equity, not equality, equity. Equality would mean, that you won't turn someone away because of their skin color for medical treatments. Right. Equity is just the opposite. Equity is where you make sure you give more to somebody because you think they've been disenfranchised in the past. Okay. So now we're redistributing wealth. Equity is redistribution. Equity is where you say, I think you've had too much for too long. I'm taking some of what you got and I'm giving it over there. Well, no one said that they over there couldn't have it either. In fact, they've got it over there, but now you just took some of mine. Well, we're going to level it out a little bit, make things look a little better. You've had it too long. Equity, when you get to the point that you are determined to make society have to give the same amount of something to everyone, then you've destroyed merit. By the way, this is not a keep the man down kind of discussion. I mean, I love the American dream. I want to see everybody succeed. I love looking back at history and finding those stories of the people who came here with nothing. I've got it. Okay, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and tell you a quick story. While we're talking about equity, let me tell you about my friend Hamid. Hamid was my interpreter in Afghanistan. Beginning of the war. We're there, you know, living out in the middle of nowhere, remote team with the Afghan people. I lived among the Afghan people for the better part of a year. Hamid was 17 years old at the time, was one of my interpreters. He was one of the best interpreters we had. So much so that we had him go ahead and live with the team because stuff would happen in the middle of the night. And what do? You can't talk to people. So Hamid was our guy. We trusted him. He became like part of the family. And then when the time came, we had to go home and Hamid had to stay. He wound up working with other special operations teams. He worked with some acronym agencies. He did some pretty cool stuff. And then his family began to get threats because how dare he work with Americans? So about a year or more after getting back from my second tour, I get a call at my office, believe it or not, from Hamid. There was not even electricity when I was there, and now he's calling me. Well, he was calling me from a refugee camp, a UN refugee camp in Tajikistan. He had fled because his brother was killed mysteriously. His family was receiving death threats, and he decided it was safer for them for him not to be there. And so he fled with nothing. So we supported him. We did what we could to help him out in his refugee camp status and worked with our congressman to see if we could get him a special visa. And sure enough, about a year and a half later, Hamid came to the United States with nothing but $10 in his pocket. No formal proof of an education, so he had to go through some testing to prove that he actually could, you know, read and write and do arithmetic at a level that was commensurate with a high school level in America. And he did. And then he worked to go to a junior college. He did great. And then he got a scholarship to go to a four-year university. And he did. And he did great. And then he got a job and he began working. And he made pretty decent money working as an interpreter for the State Department. And then he wound up being an interpreter for the president of Afghanistan. He went back and did that for a while under contract. And then he came back home, got his master's from Yale. That's my 17-year-old interpreter who came here with nothing. Because you know what? He wasn't looking for equity. In fact, I'll never forget. Hamid called me one day and he says, he still called me Commander Phil for the longest. I finally got him to quit doing that. Commander Phil, he said, I have paid off all my student loans. And I said, how'd you do that, man? You had a lot of student loans. He goes, oh, sir, He says, this country has given me so much, I don't want to have to owe it. And I told him, I said, man, I'm so proud of you. I wish more Americans thought like you. He got his master's and his U.S. citizenship in the same week because he went through the process to do it. That's where we live. That's America. But in a minute, I'm going to tell you about, you know, health equity and why Advil thinks that some people just, I don't know, need more Advil. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here. Y'all talking about Alabama. I mean, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, by the way, you hear the ads playing during the break. Let me just remind you guys. So Right Side Radio, we are a standalone entity. We are a business unto ourselves. We are not owned by the stations you might be listening to us on. We send them our show. And one of the ways we support ourselves, like any business has to, is through selling ads. So if you're listening to this show, think about this. If you consider yourself to be a Right Side ruffian, one of our fans, one of our followers, one of our folks who just keeps the show alive, well, guess what? We have an estimated well over 30,000 listeners a week across our various stations. That's 30,000 ruffians that might want to buy what you sell or make. So if you have goods or services you want to sell to a bunch of other ruffians in a captive audience, then you might want to consider advertising on Right Side Radio. All you got to do is not call the station. You got to contact us directly. You go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Click on the advertising contact tab. Send us a message. Lauren from Right Side will get back to you like ASAP, and we'd love to get you on the team. Advertise to other ruffians, rightsideradio.org. Send us a message. We'll be on it. So, dipper number two. I'm calling it the lie of health equity. Y'all, this is just mind-boggling. So the other day I saw a friend of mine, Matt Murphy, is a radio show guy. He's now in Nashville. And he posted something. And it was a picture of a rack of Advil at a CVS store. And yet, next to all the racks of Advil, there were these signs, like each like five shelves of Advil products. And there's a little sign kind of attached to each one. And it's one of those end caps. So it's like there to catch your attention as you turn the corner. And the various signs said things like, pain equity. Advil takes a stand against pain, you know, inequities. And so Murphy goes, somebody tell me what pain equity is. Does it mean like, hey, listen, I'm going to make sure you get more pain because I don't think you have enough. I mean, is that where are we here? I'm looking at Big Rig. Big Rig, you deserve more pain. So I feel like I've had far too much. I'm going to give you some of mine.
No, thanks.
Okay. So I had to do a little searching, and I decided to do a whole dipper on this because there is a movement within the medical field that will boggle your minds. I know. There's a mantra out there that everything is systemically racist. Everything. All God's children. It's systemically racist. All y'all out there are systemically racist. Even those of you that feel like you've had racism against you, you are systemically racist. Did you know that? If you're in law enforcement, you're systemically racist. If you're in the military, if you're in education, if you are in some way involved in an industry that makes things, if you are in the medical field, you're systemically racist. Pain equity. That's what we got to deal with. We got to talk about some pain equity. So Advil has launched their thing called the Advil Pain Equity Project. This is perhaps one of the greatest virtue signals I have ever seen. I mean, this one is not quite Dylan Mulvaney on a beer can, but it's up there. I mean, they might as well just go ahead and say, we're sorry for our whiteness, and oh, by the way, here's your Black Lives Matter donation. That's what Advil's doing right now. Story here, I had to do a little searching just to pull the, you know, one that was a very descriptive article. I pulled this off of something called fiercehealthcare.com. Pretty sure there's an agenda behind this one, but they take Advil's statements to put them into their write-up. So Advil has launched the Advil Pain Equity Project, a multi-year commitment to help address pain inequity and racial bias in the diagnosis and treatment of pain. I am not trying to belittle racism. Racism exists. I know that. I cannot say the world will not have any more racism in it because I cannot get into the minds of some people and say, stop. Just quit. We've passed laws against it. We have. We have worked to root it out of our systems. We have. We have not allowed for segregated services anymore. We have. Some people still self-segregate, but for the most part, the government is not going to mandate a segregation, and now you have this. Advil will be awarding grants to Morehouse School of Medicine. That's one of the HBCUs, the historically black colleges. Morehouse School of Medicine and Black Health, a nonprofit focused on health equity. No agenda there. To support the development of patient resources and courses on pain equity for medical students. I'm guessing the premise is, if you are a person of color, you don't get treated the same way. So therefore, you have more pain. How Advil is going to work on this, I have no idea. Because I'm pretty sure they don't have black Advil and white Advil. So Advil posts their signs, we're dealing with pain equities. Buy more Advil. So is there somebody saying that black people can't buy that Advil? Because I'm pretty sure it's equitable if we can all buy it. Okay, but they're really challenging the medical community. Stacey Harris, Vice President of Marketing at Advil, said in the announcement, as one of the world's most recognizable over-the-counter pain relief brands, we believe that everyone deserves relief from pain. Well, that's kind of why you exist, Stacey. To create real systemic change, she says, that gives patients true pain equity. Lord, the virtue signaling here. We need to tackle this challenge at the source, which means changing how the broader medical community treats black patients' pain. Okay, are we to understand that either A, you're saying that black people don't have the same amount of access to medical care, or are you saying they're being treated differently because they're black? I can't put a hospital where a hospital's not at. But if a black person and a white person both walk into the doctor, they generally speaking receive the same treatment. If you're telling me they don't, how about some case examples? Well, the article goes on. The inequitable diagnosis and treatment of pain is a public health issue. A recent survey conducted by Advil and Morehouse that reached 2,000 Americans found that 93% of black individuals said pain impacts their daily life. Well, I'm white. I got 3 fused vertebrae in my neck for being a paratrooper, and I hurt all the time. Does that matter? If you had asked me, I'd have said the same thing. I would have been one of the 93% saying, yes, I do have pain. I take Tylenol. I take, Advil and whatever. A recent survey conducted said 2,000 Americans found that 93% of them had black individuals said pain impacts their daily life. Did they only poll black people? 83% said they've had a negative experience when seeking help for managing their pain. Okay. But then they start talking to the experts. The experts. Like Uche Blackstock, MD, who spoke at a roundtable and said, as the founder and CEO of Advancing Health Equity, an organization founded in 2019 to help healthcare organizations address bias and racism, Blackstock's appendicitis was misdiagnosed when she was a medical student, leaving her to have to go to the ER 3 times to be taken seriously. Let me make sure I'm clear. You got misdiagnosed, but you blame that on your skin color. I blame that on being a bad doctor. If you had an appendicitis and you had pain, the premise now, the reason why she formed her old organization is because a doctor misdiagnosed her. The claim now, I want to know, did you sue that doctor for misdiagnosing you? Did you sue the doctor for racism? Because that would be a violation of their Hippocratic Oath. Blackstock says, we live in a world and a society where there is systemic racism. Here we go. I know from my own personal experience, we need to not only bring awareness to this, but systemic change as well. So this is the thing. Advil caught my attention with their pain equity project. But what really blows my mind is that we are looking right now at, any number of healthcare organizations jumping on board in the effort to virtue signal and talking about doing things that involve racial equity in our, if if, like, for instance, this article right here from the Public Health Newsletter of Berkeley. Oh, stand by. Massachusetts healthcare organizations are finding new ways to address inequities in the care for Black and Latino patients. According to an independent study that is the first to examine the success of an innovative partnership between the state's largest nonprofit health plan and clinicians. They go on to say, by the way, that Blue Cross Blue Shield is being really innovative. They're prioritizing racial equity. How do you prioritize racial equity in the application of insurance? Do you lower the rates for people based on skin color? Do you tell people they'll have coverage if they're of a certain skin color? What are you doing? Exactly. Well, the groundbreaking program launched by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts provided $25 million in infrastructure building grants to 12 healthcare organizations, all of which take part in the health plan's value-based payment model. What they're basically saying is, we're going to get out there and do something that we believe addresses people of color. I take note of the fact that this is happening at a time when Black Lives Matter was rampant and making people feel bad for daring not to be Black. I got news. All God's children are covered. If you have insurance, you just have insurance. If someone misdiagnoses you, you've just been misdiagnosed. If you find racism under every rock, then yes, you will be looking for equity at all times. But if you begin to recognize that since all of our bodies are the same, regardless of the level of, you know, pigmentation in our skin, all of our bodies function the same. Pain is pain. Misdiagnosing is just misdiagnosing. Insurance coverage is actually just insurance coverage. But if you're going to virtue signal and tell us that it's about health equity, then what you're really telling us is you're about to get off into the area of reversing the discrimination and making sure that you have somehow or another taken something from one place and given it to another. All right, Big Red, let's take a break right now, brother. We'll do that right. We'll come right back and put a little more into this because the AMA, the American Medical Association, has gotten involved. I'll tell you about that too. And then top of the hour, we'll switch gears. Have a friend named Robin Stone calling in to tell us about taxation by other means. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, making common sense like a superpower. I'm finishing up this dipper I call the lie of health equity. The very idea that you've got medical schools and the American Medical Association trying to advance the cause of racism completely flies in the face of recent Supreme Court rulings. Now, granted, racism is against the law, right? Racial preferences are typically against the law, except that we have been seeing college admissions over and over and over again, even in public institutions, based upon affirmative action or racial preferencing. That being said, then you have this. So the Association of American Medical Colleges, in a piece that I pulled off of Fox News, is dealing with basically the fact that they've got medical schools out there devoting what one doctor says is more and more time to social and political issues and leaving less time for the study of actual medicine. The report says it examined 101 medical schools that showed that 43% of those schools have, quote, promotion and tenure policies that specifically reward faculty scholarships and services based upon DEI topics. And the number is highlighted in red, suggesting that the figure is inadequate, meaning that they couldn't get adequate responses from a few of them. So it could be more. It went on to say in this article, Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, who's the board chair of an organization called Do No Harm, he says, yeah, patients are going to be viewed as members of a group based on their skin color rather than individuals. Diversity has been elevated above merit and achievement as the basis for choosing medical students and promoting faculty. All right, combine that. All right, you think, okay, first of all, that guy, I mean, maybe he's got an agenda himself. Maybe that Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, maybe he's just, you know, he's mad about something. How about this? How about the American Medical Association itself? Oh, really? Yes. I pulled this off of AMA's actual website. AMA headline, don't back down on diversity in medicine. Here we go. In June of last year, it says, with the U.S. Supreme Court set to rule on two lawsuits, which it did, by the way, seeking to undo affirmative action for institutions of higher learning, including medical schools, the House of Delegates, that's the leadership of the AMA, adopted several policies amplifying the AMA's support for diversity in medical education. Let me paraphrase that for you. Quick, they're about to tell us we can't be racist anymore. Put some policies in place. In an effort to bolster the pool of students from historically excluded racial and ethnic groups who wish to pursue a career in medicine, and the consideration of race being one of the many parts of the equation, along with test scores, grades, and interviews, when determining the mix of students, would result then in a class of physicians best equipped to serve all the nation's patients. What they just said was, yeah. They'll take the MCAT, it'll be fine. We'll do interviews to make sure they're accepted, fine. But we're also going to go ahead and look at them and go, well, we just need more Latinxes. We just got to have a few more folks of that skin color. No, I'm sorry. We've got too many like you. Good scores, but we have too many like you. So they modified their existing AMA policies. The American Medical Association itself, you ready? This is off their website. Number one, they want to urge medical schools and undergraduate admissions committees to proactively implement policies and procedures that, quote, operationalize race-conscious admissions. They're not even pretending. Operationalize race-conscious admissions. Knowing full well the Supreme Court is about to say don't do that anymore. How about this one? Unequivocally oppose legislation that would dissolve affirmative action or punish institutions for properly employing race-conscious admissions. How about this one? They adopted a new policy to, quote, recognize the consideration of race in admissions being a necessary safeguard to creating a pipeline in an environment of medical education that will propagate the advancement of health equity through diversification of the physician workforce. Blah, 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 blah. Diversity, diversity, DEI, more diversity. In addition, delegates also adopted a policy opposing the use of legacy status. What does that mean? That means if your dad and your granddad both went to that med school and you've always wanted to attend, you don't get preferential treatment, not at all. You're not a legacy anymore. They're not doing legacy. Legacy is too rooted in systemic barriers. And then how about this? Publicly state and reaffirm its support for diversity in medical education and acknowledge the incorporation of DEI efforts as vital to medical training. So the lie of health equity, what we're being told is that Advil believes that in some way, I don't know, Advil, I would say this is an admission of fault on your part. If Advil is saying that there are people out there who just, you know, need something more than they've been given them for all these years, and that somehow they've got to create a formula that, I don't know, Advil works better for black folks if we do it. No, they're not. Advil is just virtue signaling, putting their money where their mouth is to make sure it goes to organizations that promote systemic racism as a theory in medicine. And then on top of that, the American Medical Association itself is telling folks that regardless of what the Supreme Court says, we need to make sure we're using DEI in the admissions process at our medical schools. The whole thing boggles the mind. Sooner or later, we're going to wake up as a society and realize that what is happening right now is considered to be a great revision. And it's not about denying someone an opportunity. It's about now trying to go ahead and give opportunities only to someone who you believe was disenfranchised in the past. We can't change the past. We can choose not to go back there. But right now, what we're looking at here is a massive overcompensation that is creating an entirely new issue. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.